This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, Donald Trump's election Tuesday night was declared an upset because it ran counter to the polls. But Dr. Helmut Norpoth was not surprised. He actually predicted a Trump win. He tells us how he did it. And unfortunately, not everyone is taking Trump's victory so well. A generation of young liberals is showing the world where 8 years of this anti-American indoctrination leads. Rioting in the streets, flag burning, looting, vandalizing property, and setting things on fire. Well, Dinesh D'Souza is here to discuss the left's double standard, because had Hillary Clinton have won, we should have just gotten in line behind her. I'm sure that's what the left would say. Anyway, we're going to talk with Dinesh D'Souza about that, New York Times bestselling author. A little bit later, we're going to open up the phone lines and hear from you on this Thursday afternoon. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. Now, most polls and pundits predicted that Hillary Clinton would win the race to the White House, and by a landslide. Now, you know, I spoke about how I believed he was under polling, just like the marriage amendments a decade ago, because people were afraid of being marginalized by the vehement opposition to Donald Trump. But when Donald Trump won on Tuesday night, it stunned the political experts and the media. All but one. Dr. Helmut Norpoth, a political science professor at Stony Brook University in New York State and author of The Primary Model, his model has been right five of the past five presidential elections. What does he know that the pollsters and pundits don't? Well, he's here to talk to us about it. Dr. Norpoth, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your show.
All right. Don't keep me in suspense. How is it you've developed a model that works and runs counter to what the pollsters are saying?
Well, it doesn't use polling, so that's the one thing. I don't ask people how they plan to vote. I examine how people actually voted in real elections, the general elections over about 200 years, and presidential primaries over the last 100 years. And I found that the presidential primaries are a very uncanny leading indicator of what is happening in the November election. I also find that there's something like a swing of the pendulum in presidential elections that was poised to swing to the Republican side in 2016, even without Trump. So the two things together enabled me to make this forecast that I stated, that Trump would have a very high probability of being elected president.
So you're saying that human behavior, well, let me narrow that, the American voter's behavior is somewhat predictable.
Absolutely. It's very difficult over the phone, but I have a chart that tracks sunspots over about a 200-year period. And if you overlay it with presidential election, now that might sound rather foolish, you will see that both behave in a rather similar fashion, and that whatever you can apply to the sunspots, to a natural phenomenon, might also apply to elections.
So even with the almost polar opposite personalities that we saw in this election, you're saying that you could almost put the personalities aside and predict the outcome of the election?
Well, not quite, because the primaries, where the candidates have to show how strong they are, tells us something about their sort of personal appeal. And when you look at how somebody like Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump do in early, even in early primaries like New Hampshire and South Carolina, you can learn a lot about their strength as candidates. And I think it was very telling that that Hillary Clinton lost the first primary to Bernie Sanders. Then she came back and beat him in South Carolina, but that was a split verdict, and I think it told us something about her difficulties of being a successful candidate in the end, compared to Donald Trump, who won both of these primaries against a very far-ranging field that he had to contend with.
Now, what if it would have been one of the other candidates in the runoff? Now, you had Ted Cruz went all the way up to the end, almost captured the nomination, but fell just a bit short. Donald Trump then captures the nomination. Did you run models to see if someone else would have captured the nomination, how it would have turned out?
Well, I can certainly make some predictions based on other candidates, how they performed in the critical contest that I examined in New Hampshire and South Carolina. So I had matchups for almost any conceivable pairing of candidates, Republican and Democratic, based on how they did in those two primaries.
Did any candidate do better against Hillary Clinton than your model with Donald Trump head to head with Hillary?
You mean it? Well, because Donald Trump was the strongest Republican, any other Republican would have done worse.
Interesting. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Dr. Helmut Norpoth, my guest, we're talking about, he has developed a statistical model that doesn't use surveys, which I think in this election. And I want to ask you about this, Dr. Norpoth. When people are becoming more, they're lumping the pollsters and the pollsters, those who take these surveys, kind of in with the media, and there's this growing hostility toward the media. So there's a less likelihood that they're going to be forthright with him. Is this type of modeling take that out so that you can get a better read?
Well, I don't have any problem I don't have to contend with the problem of finding out what people are thinking that the pollsters have or what kind of people are turning out to vote. So I don't have to worry about this because I only take what actually happens when people go to the polls and vote. So the people who do that, they tell me something. The people who don't vote, well, they don't tell me anything, but if they don't vote in November, then they will not be part of the game anyway.
Now, were you able, based on your model, what turnout levels did you base that on, or were you able to basically project the turnout we had in the general election based upon past performance and behavior?
That's a very difficult thing. I think the turnout is something that I've not tried that. I don't know what the answer would be, but I don't make any assumptions about turnout, how many people are turning out in the general. I just make a statement about how the people who are turning out, how they are breaking, and that's sorry, I have to turn off my my cell phone. Sorry about that. I don't really have anything to say about the turnout per se.
Well, that could alter, I would think, your model.
Sure.
If you have a higher turnout than what's projected, and in this case, the turnout, we're still looking at the numbers, but appears to be slightly higher than the last election overall, and it certainly looks as if certain segments, like evangelicals, broke more strongly for Donald Trump than they had in past elections. So those things certainly factor in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't even
know what the overall turnout is. I actually, from what I've seen in terms of the overall numbers, I actually would expect turnout is down even compared to 4 years ago.
Yeah, I think in the presidential, the numbers are down. I think in overall, there's slightly uptick in overall participation. So some people did not vote top of the ticket. Where do you see us politically as a nation? Are you seeing, in your modeling, does it show a more divided and polarized politically nation, a politically polarized nation?
Well, I don't see any movement away from polarization. I think that this is a very split down the middle election. I think in terms of the popular vote, it's almost like exactly 50-50. And if you look at some of the breakdowns about how Democrats and Republicans voted, it's a very high degree of sticking with the ticket. Very little defection, very 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 small. So of course you have independents who are not attached, and they're about a third of the electorate. But I would say the polarization was probably pretty much what we have seen in the last few elections. I don't see any shift away from that.
One final question for you, Dr. Norpoth. Any of these polling organizations talking to you about trying to use your model for future projections?
No, I have not gotten any calls from any pollster. I've gotten a lot of calls from people like you and radio shows and television and newspapers, and they ask me about this. No, that's not from any poll. I mean, I know some of the polls. I know some of the people who do this polling aggregation, and I've been together with some of them, and we've had some discussions about what's going on. But I think they will just try to find better ways of getting people to respond and trying to figure out, which is a big problem for them, who is actually going to turn out on Election Day. That's something they have to do a better job at.
Well, that's extremely difficult. The whole ball game is the turnout.
Yeah, but because if you don't do that, then you might not as well make a projection from polls, because you're saying something about actual voters. So if you don't want to say, I mean, Gallup actually did maybe the right thing. And after the 2012 election, which he got wrong, he picked Romney to beat Obama. Soon after that, he quit this business, which Gallup essentially invented 80 years ago.
Yeah, it's human behavior. I think you can predict it from a standpoint of past behavior. In fact, we talk about that with elected officials. We believe that's why we track their records, because we believe past performance is the best indicator of future performance. But when you're relying on questions in candid responses, especially as we become a more politically polarized culture, and there's a hostility seen in the media, when the media kind of takes sides, people simply want to avoid conflict. So I think they're going to avoid answering these questions, or they're going to answer them the way they think the pollster wants them to answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right. And the rate of people responding to polls is just abysmal. I mean, it's just very, very low. It's so low, I think, that it's very difficult to make a case that you're actually saying something about the larger electorate.
Right, because they always call during dinner anyway. So,
Dr.
Norpoth, thank you so much for joining us. Very, very interesting. We'll be watching your website in future elections to see what you're projecting.
My pleasure.
All right. Thanks so much. Dr. Helmut Norpoth, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. That's interesting. But I do think that is one of the best ways to predict future performance is past performance. I mean, we are creatures of habit for the most part. And you put all of these factors in this modeling, and it kind of gives you the results. As we were talking about, a couple of the unknowns, the variables, turnout. And that's why there was such an aggressive effort to get voters to turn out. Now, I will have to tell you, I scratched my head a little bit about that, because I would just think that, you know, that's what you do. You vote. Nobody has to tell me that it's time to go vote. I mean, that's a sacred duty that we have. All right, folks, Dinesh D'Souza is up next when we return. Rioting, flag burning, looting, all because Donald Trump won the presidency? We're going to talk about it. Don't go away.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit, is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, FAMILIES, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. HolyLand.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Once upon a time, a traveler could go to a website hosting many different quasi-innkeepers around the world offering to rent their spare room to frugal and adventurous customers. This service was called Airbnb, and it was used by renters and rentees from every culture, religion, and nationality. It still is used by every culture and nationality and by every religion except for decided Christians or other belief systems which refuse to affirm homosexuality or any of the letters in the alphabet soup of sex/gender activists. Users of Airbnb are now forced to sign an agreement, whether they're hosting or renting, to not make their renting decisions based on, among other things, gender identity or sexual orientation. This is further evidence of a culture grown ever more hostile to biblical views on sexuality. May God give us grace to stand firm in Him. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, in New York, thousands protested through the night, marching to Trump's home on Fifth Avenue. Dozens of arrests were made. They were all chanting, "Not our president." In Los Angeles, police and riot gear had to clear protesters from the busy intersection of Highway 101 and Highway 110. An earlier march in Los Angeles drew over 5,000 people. A demonstration in Oakland, California drew over 6,000 people. I mean, look, I will be the first to say that these folks have every right to protest, to, you know, they don't have to get in line behind Donald Trump as their president. Because let me be very candid, if Hillary Clinton were elected Tuesday night, I would not have gotten in behind her. But having said that, you know, I remember back in 2012 when Barack Obama was reelected as president, the most pro-abortion, anti-faith president in the history of the country, persecuting Christians, you know, in the business realm, so on and so forth. I mean, I could go down the litany of things, lawlessness. But I, you know, somehow I missed the Baptist rioting in the streets over that. It didn't happen, folks. But what we see here is that, you know, the left that preaches tolerance, and I'm sure that, you know, had Hillary Clinton won, everyone would have been expected to salute and get in line. The hypocrisy is astounding. But it's deeper than that. This is a reflection, I think, of the anti-American sentiment that has been sown from the top down in this country over the last 8 years, in the most fertile soil where that has taken root as a college campuses, where, I mean, they were yesterday distributing Play-Doh to help people deal with the trauma of the election, free ice cream, and allowing students to skip midterm exams because of the trauma that they had experienced during the election or the election results. I mean, there's a double standard here. Well, I want to talk about that. Dinesh D'Souza is going to be joining us in just a moment. He's a New York Times bestselling author, creator of Hillary's America. We're going to talk about how the left does everything they preach against, as they have reacted not so peacefully to the election of Donald Trump. And, you know, it's like you know, it's like kids throwing a tantrum because they didn't get their way. But this is what happens when, you know, we are coddling these kids. I mean, everybody gets a trophy, you know, all of these things. This is the end result. Now, I wonder, I would be very curious as to how many of these young people and others who were out on the streets burning American flags, looting, setting fires, how many of them actually voted. That'd be interesting. I think many of these, it's just like what we saw after these series of shootings involving police officers that led to riots. It's just people are, this is lawlessness. This is the result of lawlessness. And I think we may, and I'm not sure, I think the jury is still out, but we possibly may have stopped it in time with the defeat of Hillary Clinton, because she would have compounded and expanded the lawlessness of the Obama administration. I mean, when you have lawlessness in your leaders, you're going to have chaos in your cities. I mean, we've seen that in the last 8 years. We've seen that. And that would have only gotten worse had Hillary Clinton been elected. So how long will this go on? I don't know. You know, I mean, are they going to, is this what we're going to see? And maybe that's the message they're trying to send, that they're going to be doing this for 4 years, for 8 years, however long Donald Trump's in the White House. Well, I mean, you know, eventually they're going to get tired. I wonder if maybe this was a part of the same well-funded and organized demonstration effort that was a part of the campaign process, where some of those folks that started these disturbances at Trump rallies were actually on the payroll of the Democratic Party and of Hillary Clinton's campaign. I wonder if this is the Democratic Party, if this is or Soros-funded organizations. Now, look, I'm all for people being able to express their views, to use their First Amendment, and to disagree. Again, I mean, I would not have gotten in line with Hillary Clinton, but I would not have been out in the street at midnight rioting, burning an American flag. I would have been home in bed. But they have the right to disagree. But do they have a right to destroy property and to loot, to, you know, that's costing us as taxpayers? Quite frankly, I don't, you know, if they break the laws, I don't think it should be tolerated. If they want to peacefully assemble and express themselves, have at it. But when they start wanting to intimidate and destroy property, and all this is about sending a message that if things don't go our way, we're going to get you. Well, you know, there's no room for that in a constitutional republic. A government of the people, for the people, and by the people. Now, what they should do is they should funnel their energy, just like conservatives did in the last 4 years, toward a more constructive means of changing government. I wasn't happy with the outcome of the 2012 election, but I didn't, as I said earlier, we didn't riot in the street and burn things and destroy things. We went to work. Now, it didn't turn out exactly the way we thought it would, but the organization that we put in place, the voter registration, the mobilization, it ended up helping Donald Trump capture the presidency. Now, he would not have been the one that we were looking to 4 years ago, but the infrastructure was put in place. If they don't like the way it turned out, let them go to work and start setting up a legitimate legal means of gaining control in the country. I know, that'd be a stretch for some of them. All right, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, the markets sure didn't react like everybody expected them to react on Wednesday morning. As a matter of fact, I did expect and talked about at length that at some point in time, everyone is going to get a realization that a growth model is far better than a spend our way into prosperity model. After all, there may be some uncertainty with Donald Trump's growth plan, but there is certainty in Hillary Clinton's plan, and that would be four more years of the same. This is why I was so puzzled, actually so critical, of what was going on in Wall Street leading up to this election. But what I said would happen, that eventually everyone was going to take a long, hard, honest look at Donald Trump's growth plan. Now, obviously, by the results of the markets yesterday, people looked a lot quicker than I thought they would. As a matter of fact, they probably started studying it and looking at the details a couple of weeks ago. And certainly what had happened was the knee-jerk reaction that happened before the market opened was quickly settled by the reality that a growth plan is far better than a spend our way into prosperity plan. After all, Donald Trump does bring some uncertainty to the markets. They don't like uncertainty. But Hillary Clinton brings a great deal of certainty. Four more years of below 2% growth, four more years of poverty rates going up, no wage increases, and labor participation dropping even further than 40 years. I think everybody has looked at the plan and realized this is an opportunity for some real growth in the next 2 to 3 years.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at tperkins. We're working to get connected with Dinesh. I'll bring him in when we catch him. Special announcement here. Happy birthday. Happy 241st birthday to all of my fellow Marines out there. And I tell you what, I cannot think of a better birthday present for the Corps, or for the country for that matter, than a new commander-in-chief, one who actually cares about them and cares about defending our nation and defending it and national security and not using our military for social experimentation. So I salute you, all of my fellow Marines out there, both veterans who have served and those who are currently serving. And, of course, we all honor those who have made the ultimate sacrifice in defending the freedoms that we care so much for. I would say this, though, and I think I speak for most Marines. You know, while many of us no longer don the uniform or carry the rifle, we remain committed to defending the Constitution and upholding the honor of the few and the proud. So, to my fellow Marines, happy birthday, Semper Fi. I mentioned this yesterday, and I'm not going to be able to go into a lot of detail because we're just getting some of the top-line numbers back, but we were looking at the post-election results and doing some surveys, looking at what was motivating people in this election. One thing very, very interesting, and of course we know that 81% of evangelicals, which was about 27% of the voting population, actually in the church attendance. Now, this is one of the things we looked at. This was one of the things in the primary that kind of distinguished the self-described evangelical from the little bit closer to George Barna's definition of evangelical, and that was church attendance. And that was one of the things we kind of dug down in talking to people, was those who attended a church once a week, that was 29%, so it was actually a little bit higher. And one of the interesting things, and we kind of thought this was the case, and I'll go into more detail probably next week on this, but this was one of the things we found out, that 51% of voters were impacted by the Republican Party platform's strong positions on life and religious liberty. I'm going to read you the question that was asked. As you may know, the Republican Party platform includes strong positions on unborn human life and religious liberty. How did this impact your presidential vote? That was the question asked those who voted. Strongly impacted my vote. 31%. That's huge. Somewhat impacted my vote. 20%. That's 51%. The party platform and Donald Trump embracing that platform may very well have been the difference for him in this election. Because as those, as we talked about in the final days, there were people who had concerns about issues surrounding him, character, and all of those things. But when it came down to the contrast between the two party platforms, it clearly, according to this, made a difference. Some other interesting factors here that it appears that people are kind of slightly moving away from this idea that the redefinition of marriage is okay. People beginning to question the effect of that, obviously affecting religious liberty. All right, we now have Dinesh D'Souza joining us, best-selling author, New York Times best-selling author. Dinesh, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, it's good to be on the show.
Hey, we were talking about you know, what's happening there in New York, other major cities, how those that weren't happy with what happened Tuesday night have taken to the streets, looting, burning flags, destroying private property. You know, in the left preaches tolerance. They preach that we should be accepting and all of these things. But when things don't go their way, they don't actually practice what they preach.
You know, I've been a little bit reluctant to condemn all these protests because, as you know, just, you know, we've seen, of course, the horrible Romney riots and the McCain riots. Oh, wait. Sorry. There weren't any Romney riots, were there? And there weren't any McCain riots. So, you know, this is, I think you're right. I'm being facetious. I think the point to be made is that, in general, our side is far more decent about, we would have been super disappointed had Hillary won, but we would have accepted the outcome. These guys act as if there's some inherent right that they have to rule the country. And so this display of bad behavior shows that the intolerance is squarely on their side.
Now, Dinesh, we're up against a break. We just got you here a little bit late in this segment. Can you hold on for 2 minutes and come back on the other side of this break?
Certainly.
All right. All right, folks, we got to take a break, but we're going to come back on the other side of the break. Dinesh D'Souza, it's going to stick around, New York Times best-selling author. We're going to continue this conversation, also talk about his latest project, how that's going. So stick around. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back with more Washington Watch. In the meantime, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Information there for you. And, you know, I want to encourage you, you know, to be praying for our nation. We're in a moment of transition. A critical moment. But this is a time we should be prayerful, and especially as the new administration begins to take shape. We need to be praying that the right decisions, the right people are all in place. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and finish our conversation with Dinesh D'Souza. Don't go away.
After 8 years of sustained attack on our most cherished values by the Obama administration, the 2016 presidential election will prove to be a critical juncture for our nation. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with the Values Voter Presidential Voter Guide. Determining the right presidential candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin of political rhetoric. Our voter guide includes each candidate's answer to important questions affecting faith, family, and freedom. It compiles the candidate's stated positions on a range of issues, including Planned Parenthood funding, the repeal of Obamacare, the future of natural marriage, the protection of religious liberty, and more. Go to frcaction.org/2016 to view the Values Voter Guide. You can also watch videos of the candidates explain how they would protect our religious freedom as president. Again, that's frcaction.org/2016.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Take a stand for your Christian faith this Christmas season by wearing and sharing AFA's new Keep Christ in Christmas wristbands. Get one free when you stop by afa.net/Christmas. The wristbands come in packs of 10, so order several to give to your friends. Remember, when you request your free wristband and order more, you're keeping the American Family Association in the battle to restore Christian values in America. Visit afa.net/Christmas.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back. I'm Tony Perkins. Website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right. We were discussing how angry mobs erupted erupted across the country against President-elect Donald Trump last night. Some not so peaceful. The reaction, well, it's not surprising, but obviously troubling. I think the crumbling foundation here in our country. Dinesh D'Souza, my guest. Dinesh, I was talking about this earlier, and I don't have any problem with him not liking Donald Trump, not wanting to get in line behind him, because I'm going to tell you right now, I would not get in line behind Hillary Clinton. But just like I did not want to get behind and did not get behind Barack Obama in 2012 after his reelection, most pro-abortion, anti-faith, freedom president in the history of the country, but I didn't go out and start burning cars and tires. I went to work to try to affect the outcome of the next election. What is it about the left that they don't get?
Well, I think two things are going on here. One is the fact that the media has been putting out the message for now 3 months that not only is Trump a bad guy from their point of view, but is somehow an illegitimate candidate, that he doesn't have the right to even contest the presidency, that he's so outside the American mainstream. And Obama and Hillary have both fortified this idea that somehow he's not a normal Republican, he's beyond the pale, he's going to blow up the world, he's a bigot, and so on. So this is license, if you will, the violent left to say, okay, well, acting on those instructions, we're going to sort of take it to the streets. I think the second is that it has now dawned on them the stakes involved. Not only has our side, if I can use that term, saved the Supreme Court, but there's now the prospect that we will, in a sense, dominate all three branches of government. And we haven't really had that in a very long time. The Democrats have been so used to being the majority party, going all the way back to the New Deal till 1980. Since then, we've had a sort of divided government. But now, for the first time, the path clears for Republicans to have the Congress and the presidency, and if Trump gets a couple of nominees, the court. And so the left is going ballistic.
And it's even bigger than that, Dinesh. If you look at the and that's big. I mean, that's like Barney Fife said, that's bigger than the gold truck when it was coming through Mayberry. But when you look at the bench on the left, the Democratic bench, it's non-existent. You had two people running, basically, in the Democratic primary. You had Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. And Tim Kaine, you know, he's not got a future running for anything. Where are they going to find their leaders? And you compare that to the Republicans that had 17 people running for president, governors. They picked up two more governorships. And, I mean, the bench is deep on the Republican side. They could, if they do it right, could dominate American politics for a generation.
That's a good point. I don't think the left is wise enough to be thinking that far ahead. I think what they're looking at is the fact that they've had this sort of free run with Obama. They were looking to continue it with Hillary. They felt sure with the polls and with the experts. They thought they had this. They were literally uncorking the champagne. And so part of this is the great gap between being sure you're going to win and facing the certainty that you've lost. That's just a wide road to travel, a big swing of the pendulum, and emotionally they're proving incapable of handling it.
But where do they go from here? I mean, do they keep these tantrums up for 4 years?
Well, they're going to try. I think what they're trying to do is put the Republican administration, in some senses, beyond the pale. I think, in other words, what they want to do, I think, is to provoke Trump. They're going to try to sort of disrupt things enough to create a taint of illegitimacy around anything that is done by the new administration. This is why I think it's really important for Trump to respond to this in a calm, statesmanlike manner. It's important for us not to freak out on our side and just recognize that this is just juvenile tantrums by people who don't accept the results of an election. Now, we'll see what they do. I mean, ultimately, if they try to secede from the union or try to do stuff like that, then we'll have to consider those things when the time is right. But as of now, what you're basically getting is essentially, you know, people who haven't grown up responding in a kind of childish way to a result that they don't like.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I think you're right. I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to taint the Trump administration, try to make them radioactive. But in a way, that's what they did in the election, in the campaign, and it didn't work. He went straight, unlike most politicians who try to pacify the media, placate them, and avoid confronting them. I mean, he went right at them, went right at the left. I don't think, you know, and I think that's what motivated people to support him in the large numbers that he did. So I'm not sure that's going to work.
Yeah, he pulled a surprise move on them. He went behind their flank and stole voters that they didn't think were even at risk. As you know, Hillary didn't even bother to go to Wisconsin. She thought that state was so safe in her camp. So, yeah, I think that, you know, this was a case where the left felt that they couldn't lose. And part of the reason they felt they couldn't lose is there was a revolt inside the Republican Party. It almost looked like the party that is smaller, that has, if you will, 40% or 45% of the electorate, somehow had one-third of its own members who were defecting away from Trump, and some of them even openly for Hillary. I mean, you saw how President Bush and George H.W. Bush and Mitt Romney, so Trump seemed to be a weakened Republican who couldn't possibly pull it off, and yet, against all odds, with almost, you may say, providential supervision, he did.
Found it interesting. I know you've looked at these numbers, but the percentage of support that he gained from evangelical voters, despite the issues they had with his character and past behavior, they turned out and voted more for him than they did George W. Bush in 2004. That is pretty significant, and I would think is going to leave a mark on his administration.
Well, there are going to be some Christians who complain about that, but to me, it actually represents the political maturation of evangelical Christians. Because, look, you know, we know from experience that you can have a guy like George W. H.W. Bush, who was a war hero, as was Bob Dole. Reagan made war movies during World War II, and Reagan yet had the ability to show leadership and inspire the military in a way that Bush and Dole did not. And so the irony is that sometimes someone can be flawed in personal life and nevertheless have those leadership qualities. You know, clearly the last time around, the Republicans dominated a very clean-cut guy, Romney, and the time before, another very clean-cut guy, McCain, and yet the left was able to portray them as Lucifer. And so this time, I think Republicans said, look, we need a tough guy. Hillary and Bill play rough. We need someone who can throw a punch. Now, he's an outsider. He might have a couple of skeletons in his closet, but he still might have that public leadership that will enable him to get to the White House, and they've been proven right.
But Dinesh, it was more than just picking somebody who was a street fighter, if you will, that could make their way to the White House. He also made some very clear, specific commitments, articulated positions of concern, or areas that are of concern to evangelicals, like the partial birth abortion. He embraced religious liberty. He really went further than most Republicans nominees have gone in the past in building those bridges into the evangelical world, and it appears that it paid off big time for him.
Would you say, Tony, that you thought that Trump took a stronger, substantive pro-evangelical stance than, say, George W. Bush did?
I think he did when it came to the issue of abortion. If you'll notice, I was, in that last debate, that third debate, is where I think he actually sealed it. He closed the deal when he actually said, he said it before, but he, in that debate, said he would nominate pro-life justices. We didn't have, George Bush wouldn't say that. Other candidates wouldn't say that. Nominees wouldn't say that because they didn't want to have a litmus test. And then he also went directly at the issue of late-term abortion. We've not had a nominee that has done that before. And I believe that may be the most important moment in this campaign in terms of his support that he gained from evangelicals.
That's very interesting. I spoke at the Liberty University convocation a couple of weeks ago. Jerry Falwell, of course, had come out for Trump, but because of some of the revelations about Trump's personal life and the stuff on the bus, there was some Christian resistance to what Jerry Falwell Jr. had done. And so in the teeth of all that, I spoke at convocation to students and was able to have some very good dialogues with them about how in politics, the world is flawed, the candidates we pick are flawed, and we're choosing between two existing candidates. It's always utopian to think that there's some third option that's not
right,
even on the table, that can come in and save the day.
Yeah, I was there shortly after you were speaking at convocation, I think a week or so later, and the feedback was very positive from your interaction with the students. And I think that's a part of the problems. People step back who are not engaged in this process, and they try to create this ideal situation and say, well, you just have to, we want this or we want that. Well, you have to deal with what you have. And in this election, we had two individuals who were, quite frankly, less than desirable if we would have been able to shape our own candidates. And most of us, now Jerry Jr.'s an exception, but most of us were not with Donald Trump in the beginning. But when it came down to a choice between him and Hillary, and those revelations came out. But I think as we got closer to the election, I think people took the approach that you discussed, that with those students, that you have to make a choice based on what is before you.
I think the other thing, the other factor, and this was very much the theme of my movie, Hillary's America, and the accompanying book of the same title, was simply the fact that I think people realize that, we normally choose between kind of the normal Republican, the normal Democrat. Well, Hillary isn't a normal Democrat. She's in many ways, she would have been worse even than Obama, because Obama, at the end of the day, is an ideologue. But the Clintons are sort of like Bonnie and Clyde. I mean, these are people who have taken corruption to an unprecedented level. And they've abused the White House before. They certainly abused the office of Secretary of State. To put them in charge of the Treasury and give them the kind of power, which, by the way, is unchecked by the media. We've seen that in this
right.
election. It's a terrifying prospect. So I believe that this country, most people don't realize how narrowly we dodged a bullet.
I could not agree with you more. I think you're absolutely right. We narrowly dodged a bullet. And I'll go further. I'll say this is not...
This November, faith, family, and freedom are on the ballot. After 8 years of President Obama, this election will mark the beginning of a new chapter in America. With hundreds of federal races and thousands of state and local contests, the results will determine the future of pro-life legislation, our ability to freely live out our religious beliefs, and who our next Supreme Court justices will be. That's why FRC Action is mounting the National Values Voter Bus Tour. Our bus tour is traveling the country and working with national and state groups to equip and mobilize values voters in battleground states and key races across the nation. As it travels the country, the Values Bus could be coming to a city near you. Join us in the effort for your values, your vote, your future. Visit valuesbustour.org for more information and to find a stop near you. That is valuesbustour.org. Hope to see you soon. What does it mean to be equal? According to the dictionary, equal means the same for each person. Last year, the so-called Equality Act was introduced in Congress by adding sexual orientation and gender identity as protected categories under federal civil rights law. This act would give special perks to some people just because they identify as homosexual or transgender. It's important to remember that many bills introduced in Congress have positive-sounding titles that hide their true agendas. The Equality Act is a perfect example. This bill puts people who live out their faith on unequal footing under the law. It imposes sexual orientation and gender identity provisions on religious schools and universities, rejects the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and so much more. FRC's new publication on this legislation is a brief summary of the dangers this bill poses towards those who hold a biblical view of marriage and the family. Visit frc.org/equalityact to learn more. Does the U.S. Senate have a responsibility to confirm anyone that President Obama nominates to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat? After the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, an intense political debate has emerged around this crucial question. The Constitution does not require conditions or limitations on the manner in which the Senate must act if the president nominates. Family Research Council believes that the Senate should not consider or deliberate on any nominee President Obama puts forward to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat. This is because the president has consistently nominated Supreme Court justices and federal judges who view the Constitution as a malleable political instrument instead of a text with a defined meaning based on the consensus held by the Founding Fathers. To learn more about this critical issue, including 8 helpful questions and answers, visit frc.org/Supreme Court. That's frc.org/Supreme Court. Pain. We all know what it feels like. We all try to avoid it. But did you know we likely started feeling pain at a very young age, well before we were born? Scientific studies are showing that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or even earlier. The medical research is on our side. It supports our legislative efforts to protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
Hey folks, we had a little technical difficulty there. Sorry we lost you, but I got back just in time to tell you goodbye. And in the meantime, we'll figure out what happened here. And let me leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6. When you've done everything you could do, just when you prayed, when you prayed.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.